powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, well, the Seahawks played yesterday, Jake. I don't know if you were aware of that or if you watched the game. You missed...
Yeah, I might have caught some of it.
Oh, you did? Okay, good. Well, in that case, I'm hoping you can tell us maybe some of those little things that in particular caught your attention, because your girl was at the game, and so a few of minor things that were happening on the sideline. And I'll say this. Can I say that? Because, Curtis, you're going to hate me. I'm just going to pause us for just a minute before we...
I'm sorry,
but let me just say something. No, listen. I was... watching when Gerald Everett had his first fumble and walked to the sideline, I wrote, like, oh, tapped his chest to be, like, my fault. And so many who else's fault would it be, Gerald? Like, so many people were getting so mad. I was like, poor Gerald. Man, I felt bad for that guy. I did.
No, I did. I felt bad for him, too. I mean, when you're in that situation and you have three turnovers that are directly on you.
Yeah.
Nobody else. Like, there's nothing else you could lay fault or lay blame or anything else. Oh, man, it happened because of this. No. It's just squarely on you. That's a dark place to be. And obviously, you hope it doesn't affect his confidence, you know, moving forward. I don't believe it will. But, gosh, I mean, just so fortunate that those three turnovers did not cost them the game.
Well, and I also, it's always interesting to see the body language of people after they have, especially after they make huge mistakes. Just to see, you know, how does someone respond?
Yeah.
Like for that one, you had like Carlos Dunlap came up to Gerald Everett, who was sitting on the bench, and kind of like patted his shoulder a little bit. You know what I mean? Like someone who isn't currently out there, instead of just, cause I thought that was interesting too. Instead of Carlos Dunlap just standing there, minding his own business, being like, I'm not playing and I'm in my 30s and I'm done. You know what I mean? Like, anyways, that's just my reaction. But let's get to actually what caught our eye. Jake, you go first.
All right. Caught my eye. I got a whole bunch of them, so I don't know if we can get through them all today. But, I mean, let's be honest. One of the biggest aspects about this game was that Russell Wilson looked like Russell Wilson. I mean, let's not kid ourselves. I mean, the fact that Russell was making good decisions, that he was, you know, making throws deep down the field, that, you know, the beautiful touch passes, using the short to intermediate part of the field was really great to see from Russell Wilson, who has been struggling since returning from his finger injury. And, you know, seeing him, you know, make some wildly inaccurate throws, you know, Russell wasn't perfect on the day, but, man, he played a really, really good football game, and he was the reason why they won. The offense, you know, turning it up and being able to move the ball and being able to convert on third downs at different points in time, and Russell Wilson coming up with big clutch plays. Man, it was really good to watch him do that despite not having great protection in this game. It was really comforting to see, and you just hope that he can continue to keep building upon that performance. And really, Stacey, you look at the game offensively. I mentioned earlier that there were two missed throws that could have been touchdowns, but then you have the Gerald Everett drop that turned into an interception.
Yep.
You have the Gerald Everett fumble that maybe could have turned into a touchdown. Who knows? But Russell's looking at a potential, you know, four touchdown type of day. And it was really good to see that. It was much needed. And hopefully you can see Russell in these final five games catch fire with this offense.
All right. I'm trying to run through a couple of these so we can try to get through them. I'm going to go with what caught my eye. It wasn't something that happened on the field per se, but can we just talk for a minute, Jake? Just for a split second here. I'll be quick with mine. George Kittle's final stat line. In a loss, George Kittle was 9 of 12 for 181 yards and a pair of touchdowns.
Yeah,
this guy
not good.
Is... Where do you rank him in top tight ends in the league?
I mean...
One? Two?
I mean, Travis Kelce is obviously...
He's not as... Kelce isn't quite as complete a tight end.
He's not as quite as complete, but he is a dominant receiving tight end. I mean, from that perspective. But, I mean, George Kittle? Yeah. I mean, I would put him probably at number one. Number one, number two, depending on how you value the tight end and what their role is. But in terms of complete tight end, yeah, George Kittle, yeah, he is the best, most complete tight end in the league.
I think it's just one of those things where you look back at it with the team that loses and realize just how stellar one person's performance is. Aaron Rodgers had, I think, 4 touchdowns and a loss for the Packers this year. You think of Tyler Lockett last year for Arizona and that overtime loss with over 200 receiving yards, right? There are moments like that when you just think, okay, you can feel good about this win if you're the team, but look back at how did that person get those stats and what can you correct from there?
Well, there's no doubt. There were so many busted coverages when it came to George Kittle and his success. But, man, you just love the physicality that he brings to the table for the 49ers, and you just wish that he was a Seattle Seahawk. Okay, so talked about Russell Wilson and the offensive side of the ball. I'm going to go defense here. I want to give a shout-out to 2 guys in particular. Quandre Diggs, he's the best player on defense. I mean, if there was any question, if anybody had any ideas or hey, there's a little bit of controversy, maybe I think it's Daryl Taylor or Bobby Wagner. No. Quandre Diggs is the best player on defense, consistently coming up with turnovers, consistently running the alley and being a physical presence in the running game. Sure tackler, and has really kept everything together for this defense. I mean, Quandre Diggs is looking for a payday. He's going to be a free agent this offseason. One of my biggest concerns, Stacey, to be quite honest with you, is that Quandre Diggs is going to be a hot commodity on the free agent market and that the Seattle Seahawks are not able to retain him because he is playing amazing football right now, and I just love the guy. The other shout-out I want to give is DJ Reed. DJ Reed is a baller, and you talk about that, you know, the final ending or sequences of the game, that whole sequence where Pete Carroll throws the challenge flag and he's able to win the challenge because Brandon Ayuk did not complete the catch. That doesn't happen unless it's DJ Reed that's coming up with the big play. And then the play before that, he comes up with a beautiful PBU on a slant route. I mean, DJ Reed, when he is on his game and he's feeling confident, he is a very, very good corner in this league, and happy that the Seahawks were able to snag him away from the 49ers a few years ago.
Cornerback play has quietly resolved itself, at least for this season. You had Reed swapping sides. That seemed to solve a lot of those issues. But Pete Carroll was asked specifically about this at his press conference this past week and was asked, hey, you guys have gotten better at corner. And I know that Trey Brown is now done for the season and he was a big part of that. But what went into that? He talked about switching DJ Reed. And then he also said that they've made some scheme adjustments. What did you think that meant?
Well, I just think that when you're talking about the way that they're playing, I mean, against the 49ers, I told you going into the week that they play more aggressively, more confidently against the 49ers than they do against pretty much everybody else. But you just see them tighten down their coverages more and give them more opportunities, as particularly for DJ Reed, more so than anybody else. They give him more opportunities to play man-to-man, play more aggressively than the other side with Sidney Jones and more of kind of that revolving door on the other side with the cornerback group. But that is really what I've noticed from a schematic difference, is they've been tighter in their coverage and they've been more willing to play man-to-man, which at the beginning of the year, Stacey, they didn't even touch it. What you got?
Oh, I forgot. I ended with corner, so I thought that was mine. So I was like, Jake, hello, take it away. I'm going to go with the energy after this game. So when you were down on the sideline, guys were walking off, they were excited. But I mentioned that locker room, that post-game locker room, reporters no longer allowed in there, but you could hear music in the hallway. You could hear music blaring during press conferences. And I got to say, it's been a while since it's felt that excitable, that exciting in the locker room and in this team kind of behind the scenes. And I understand why. You've been losing. You almost entered into a 4-game losing stretch. You are having guys where they've been here for a decade and they've never seen this kind of losing. So it's been a struggle. I think that for Pete Carroll especially, and for a Pete Carroll-led Seahawks team, you need moments like that. And I saw quite a few comments about, you know, hey, this team is having a disappointing season. They shouldn't be celebrating this much after a win. But I think Pete Carroll most especially relies on that kind of positive reinforcement. And that is exactly the kind of boost that his coaching style needs.
Well, it absolutely does, because now you're talking about you need to start somewhere. First win, then you can start to build off of that and have momentum. You play the Texans, who you should beat and you should take care of. But again, you got to show up and play. You got to show up and execute. And the Texans have surprised a team or two this season. So you got to get it done. But it is nice to be able to have that feeling back in your locker room again. There's no doubt. Okay. D. Eskridge, he's dynamic. He's a dynamic weapon who needs to be more involved. And you just saw the glimpses. Yes, he gets his first touchdown of his career with the Seahawks. That was great to see, and I'm sure it felt so good for him after all of the adversity that he has been dealing with early on up to this point. But did you see him on that deep cross route? Did you guys notice him on that deep cross route other than the catch? I'm genuinely asking here. Did you guys notice?
No.
He is lightning in a freaking bottle. I mean, he got across the field so fast. You just saw his speed on full display, and you haven't really seen it yet because I think that as a rookie, kind of in between figuring out exactly where he's supposed to be, and you just haven't seen him just totally turn on the jets. But on that deep cross that he caught, you just watch him on the early part of that route. I mean, he is a water bug. It is like Tyreek Hill out there on the field. And it got me fired up, but it also leaves me frustrated because of the lack of production that you've been able to generate from him and just this offense in general. They have the skill weapons. Gerald Everett, DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, D. Eskridge. They've got the skill players. They've got to be better up front, which is another one of my caught my eye that I'm going to roll in here. The O-line is terrible, and I know that they've got injuries, but my goodness, this has been utterly disgusting over the last 2 weeks. They have to play better. You've got to get more from this group, and it just is frustrating when you know that it was a point of emphasis, or at least it should have been more of a point of emphasis for this organization this past offseason, and the offensive line not playing up to the standard has been a big reason why. It's not the sole reason, but it's another big reason why this offense has greatly underperformed this season.
Yeah, I don't love being put in a position to sound like I'm like standing one player or one coach, but Russell Wilson, the team did make an effort to address Russell Wilson's concerns this offseason. They added Shane Waldron, the offensive coordinator he reportedly wanted. They went out and made a trade when they had just 4 draft picks, made a trade with the Oakland, I keep saying Oakland, I'll forever say Oakland, the Las Vegas Raiders to acquire Gabe Jackson and shore up that offensive line. And I think that there is a difference between saying the team made an effort to do what Russell Wilson wanted and the team fixed an issue.
Yeah, but to me, the effort made was not what it needed to be. You know, going out and getting Gabe Jackson on paper sounds nice, but Gabe Jackson was the last remaining competent guard that was left on the market. So, I mean, I think that when you look at that, okay, you could say that, but they didn't go out and get a center. They didn't go out and get quality depth. They didn't go out and really shore up that offensive line. Instead, kind of rolled the dice in a few aspects, and it didn't pay off for them. And so you're right. They did make an effort, but it hasn't been the right answer and has not been the right fix, and that has been a major problem for this organization for the past 6 years.
All right, that'll do it for What Caught My Eye. Let's go ahead and jump into headlines.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headlines?
I was trying to...
I'm Ron Burgundy.
I had my show sheet open to a second.
I'm Ron Burgundy.
Here's the thing. I'm in here making fun of Mike Salk the other day because he was complaining about not having his... printed show sheet in front of him, and the entire time I was like, it's called the internet. Open up a Google Doc.
Ever heard of it?
And here I am, like, opening the wrong page, and I'm like, where's my show sheet? All right, I got it. Nailed it.
Headline number one, Mario Cristobal is officially Miami's next head football coach after leaving the Oregon program after 4 seasons. What's the real headline?
Good news. Chip Kelly's been rumored to Oregon. Sub-headline underneath this headline. It's only good news for the rest of the Pac-12. I don't actually think this would be a wonderful fit. And I know that it's all a rumor. He's already preoccupied at the moment. But I don't think this would be a great fit for Oregon. And I think that Oregon fans, look, I could be eating crow with this, but I'm going to pretend I never said it. I think Oregon fans pretending that another coach like Kelly would in any way be an upgrade over Cristobal are fooling themselves.
Yeah, they are fooling themselves because, look, Chip Kelly's going to come in and do exactly what Chip Kelly does. He's not going to change, and he's going to, you know, go back to what he knows and what he did that was successful at Oregon the first time. That doesn't mean that's going to be successful this time around. And it doesn't mean that he's going to be successful on the recruiting trail the way that Mario Cristobal was. I mean, my goodness, I don't understand that logic at all. Mario Cristobal was fantastic at Oregon. The approach that he brought was different to the Pac-12 in terms of the style of recruiting, whether you agree with it or not. It was different, and it was successful. And he was building a legit powerhouse at Oregon that, you know, was obviously looking to get over the hump. And this year they fell short of that thanks to Utah and Kyle Whittingham. But that program was going in the right direction. And personally for me, Stacey, I'm bummed. I think it's a loss for the Pac-12 in general. Because you had Lincoln Riley joining the Pac-12, Mario Cristobal was doing his thing at Oregon, and then you hope that it rises everybody else on the Pac-12 level to be more competitive than what they have been, but you lose out to Miami, and Miami, man, they went big. They dived deep into the pocketbooks to be able to pull this one off.
Well, where did they get that money from?
That's what we didn't get to in the opener. Curtis, do you want to touch on that?
Yeah, so Miami has a chain of hospitals that they've been operating, and
yes,
they're making a ton of money over the last, you know, couple of years because, well, COVID is a thing. It's still a very real thing here in 2021, soon to be 2022, and they have been using those millions, like hundreds of millions of dollars in profits that they've been making to fund the football program and fund this massive investment into Mario Cristobal and paying his buyout at Oregon and paying his 10-year, $80 million contract.
I think people are understandably and rightfully so a little queasy about that.
Yeah, is that the best allocation of funds?
I don't know that it is.
I don't know. I mean, obviously that's the University of Miami's call on that. And
it's a private school.
It's a private school, sure. Yeah. I mean, look. They are paying around $18 million in buyout money for Manny Diaz's contract, who they just fired, Mario Cristobal's buyout at Oregon, and they're paying him on top of that. They are forking out some serious cash, and the reason why they're doing that is they're bringing Mario Cristobal home. This is the move that they have wanted to make for years and years, at least from a fan perspective. And this is a huge coup and get for Miami to bring Mario Cristobal back to South Florida, back to Miami, where I do believe his style is going to be successful. His recruiting is going to be successful. And maybe you see Miami turn back into a powerhouse. And if they can get that going, that investment that they have made into the football program, I think will come back and be favorable.
Quick question before we jump into the next headline. Just seeing Lincoln Riley and, well, I don't want to include Brian Kelly because that's just a whole different monster when you're dealing with that conference.
I can't wait to see how that plays out.
USC moves and then Cristobal being lured away to Miami make you feel any differently about the amount of money that Washington should have thrown at someone? Or do you think Kalen DeBoer is genuinely a great fit?
I think the story's yet to be written on Kalen DeBoer. I think anybody that is painting Kalen DeBoer as a home run and the perfect fit and this, that, and the other, look, they're just, I don't know the perfect saying for that, but I think they're trying to sell you something, to be honest with you. I the story is yet to be written on Kalen DeBoer. It is yet to be figured out as to whether or not this is going to be a successful run at Washington, or if it's going to be a middle-of-the-road move and they are average and they're maybe a little bit above average instead of really truly competing at a high level in the Pac-12 and nationally. We'll wait. We'll have to wait and see. I like the possibility of Kalen DeBoer, and I think that there's a chance there that he is successful. But in regards to nationally really going out and offering money and things like that, I mean, we had Mike Burrell go on and say that they offered $7.5 million to Matt Campbell. Campbell turned it down. I mean, that's some serious money. That's some serious dough. Yep. But at the same time, you see these other you know, programs go out there and be extremely aggressive. And in college football these days, that's what you're going to have to do to go and land yourself a big fish like that. And UW decided to not proceed forward. And we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. But in terms of making themselves a powerhouse program and going out of their way to really go after it and do that, they elected not to do it.
Headline rewrites.
College football playoff field has been set. Alabama, Michigan, Georgia, and Cincinnati make up the final four teams. What is the real headline?
Fans ready to crown Cincy the new America's team and watch them lose in the playoff, just like the Cowboys do every year.
Short run. You just feel for Cincinnati, who have had an amazing run the last 2 years to get them in the college football playoff when everything is stacked against them. Cincinnati should not be in the college football playoff, but that's how good they have been. Just a bummer to see them go down to the SEC, because their season and their buildup that Luke Fickell has done there has been nothing but impressive.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three. Stacey, I don't know if we can get to your headline.
Yes, we can,
short
Curtis.
Time.
Let me say it one.
The Kraken, they won on Friday, beating the Oilers 4-3. They've got a hot streak going
huge
on.
Huge.
They play the Penguins tonight. What is
so
the
hot right now.
What's the real headline?
Breaking,
oh, we got to go to break.
I'm breaking every rule of headlines. It's something that only I like. It serves one person, and that's me. Quest for the Cup is back on. I want to say it every single time the Kraken win a game. Quest for the Cup, but it's Quest with a C. It's a marketing thing I'm trying out.
Now, why didn't you bring that up with Marissa when we had her on at 11:45?
I'm just workshopping it still. I'm sure Marissa would love one of
you
the
don't
t-shirts
want to be scoffed at by the by the experts.
When you print it on t-shirts,
yes,
and merchandise,
yes,
you're not workshopping
Quest
it.
Quest for the Cup with a C.
You're trying to make it happen, and it's
it
not going to happen.
Okay. That's what you think.
I feel like I'm watching Mean Girls all over again.
I don't know.
Fetch is not going to happen.
The Seahawks' next opponent is dealing with some injuries at quarterback. Don't go anywhere. I'll tell you everything you need to know and take a look around the rest of the NFL next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's take a look around the rest of the NFL. We're gonna start with the Texans. The Seahawks' next opponent, quarterback Tyrod Taylor, is week to week with a wrist injury. That means rookie quarterback Davis Mills could get the start against the Seahawks Sunday. It will not be, should he start, Davis's first start of the season. He'll also be at home. This game is on the road for Seattle with a 10 a.m. start. But it's certainly good news going against a rookie quarterback that at times this season, Jake, has certainly struggled.
Oh, mightily struggled. And even to the point where he got benched early on in the game against the Colts. So, I mean, when you talk about the opportunity here for the Seahawks to continue to keep building off of this win and to hopefully build off the performance that the offense had, Russell Wilson had, this is a prime opportunity against a really, really bad Texans team. Now, I do want to remind people that this is the NFL, and you have to come prepared each and every single week. The Tennessee Titans, who a lot of people think are really good, the Texans
beat a lot of people in a way that felt accusatory.
Well, I mean, I'm just putting it out there. I did tell everybody that I was not buying the Tennessee Titans as the next best team, but you got on that hype train,
yeah,
Stacey.
Yeah.
But they lost. They lost to the Texans 22-13 a few weeks ago. So, again, you have to take every opponent seriously. You have to play to your best ability. But let's be honest, the Seattle Seahawks should absolutely win this game against the Houston Texans and continue to keep building upon that performance. And if you get Davis Mills as the quarterback instead of Tyrod Taylor, I think that plays very favorably to the Seattle Seahawks. Tyrod Taylor is a guy that makes me nervous because he's fully capable of putting together great games, and he's a guy that can extend plays with his legs, which can make it incredibly frustrating and difficult on defenses like the Seattle Seahawks. So if you get a pocket passer like Davis Mills, you know what he's going to be. You know how they're going to try to game plan around his strengths. And so overall, I think that's very positive when you're talking about the Seahawks.
As a reminder, just in case Tyrod Taylor is a game-time decision, final injury report comes out Friday. Inactives are 90 minutes before kickoff. Speaking of the Tennessee Titans, Jake, they have designated receiver Julio Jones to return from the injured reserve. He's been out since week 9 with a hamstring injury. Now, here's my question. In hindsight, knowing that Jones has been dealing with injuries with Tennessee, are you glad the Seahawks didn't make the trade?
I mean, yeah, hindsight. I mean, we talk about
I was all
his,
about it.
His injury, yeah. And yeah, I was definitely interested in that potential opportunity with Julio Jones. But, you know, this is something when you talk about an elite receiver that's dealing with ankles and hamstrings and things like that, it definitely should put you on pause in terms of what they can do and their availability moving forward. They're not getting younger. Their body isn't getting necessarily healthier through that process. And it's even more difficult to get your body up to speed and recover. You know, and so I think that part of it has hit Julio Jones harder than anybody anticipated. And the crazy thing is that the Tennessee Titans have been able to remain successful, even though they're on a two-game losing streak, and not a pretty one, by the way. They have been able to remain successful despite that. So we'll see how they finish out the rest of the year. Hopefully they'll bounce back. At least I think they will, because they're playing the Jags next. But, you know, how they finish the year will be incredibly fascinating.
There already have been, as recently as last season, actually, reports of Ben Roethlisberger considering retirement. Those reports resurfaced over the weekend and on Sunday. He was asked about his decision, whether or not he's told former teammates and those within the organization that this is going to be his last season. This is what he told ESPN's Brooke Pryor. Quote, "I haven't told everybody that, no." And that's a joke, he laughed. "Honestly, we just got done with this game. I'm exhausted. We play in a couple hours. It feels like that's my focus." So he said his focus is on Minnesota. "I'll address all that stuff after the season," he says. It certainly seems like if it's not his last season with Pittsburgh, if it's not his last season in the NFL, it's at least his last season with Pittsburgh.
I mean, if it's not with Pittsburgh, it should be over. I mean,
I think there's a team that would be willing to, if he were interested, bring him in.
Sure. I mean, why would you not?
But
right? With his
mean.
Pedigree and background and all that. But he should not be in the league. At his age, he should not be playing for any other team than the Pittsburgh Steelers. I just think it would be flat wrong. Okay. And quite frankly, Ben Roethlisberger barely made it back this year to play for Pittsburgh. And I don't think he should have come back. I mean, I've been very vocal about that. I think Ben Roethlisberger should have retired this last year and let it be that. But obviously, with the way things ended last year, a bitter taste in his mouth, wanted to come back and show that he could have a better season. And quite frankly, Ben Roethlisberger is just, he's a shell of himself. It doesn't mean he can't be successful or he can't have good games and positive things that he does for the team. But the team isn't getting better with Ben Roethlisberger as their quarterback. So I think that this is the right thing to do. I think it's the best thing for the organization and, quite frankly, for Ben Roethlisberger. He doesn't have anything left to prove at this stage. Like, hey, you're not Tom Brady. That's okay. That's not a knock on you and your legacy that you've left there with Pittsburgh. So I just think it's appropriate for him to retire because he's just not the same player.
Two of the best defenses in the NFL right now are facing off for Monday Night Football. The 8-4 Patriots are taking on the 7-4 Buffalo Bills. The Bills are the number one defense in the league in terms of total yards surrendered, just 275 per game. New England Patriots in there at number four in top five defenses. That also in total yardage per game. Both also have excelled at scoring defenses, limiting opposing offenses. Are we expecting then for this one, Jake, a very quiet, boring, non-offensive heavy game?
Potentially. That's actually what I am anticipating. I think Mac Jones actually has done a really good job with their New England Patriots offense and doing exactly what they want to implement to complement the defense. But this is what's been really interesting about watching the New England Patriots is watching them build and revamp and change the way that they play. Now that you have Mac Jones there, the defense has been really performing at a high level. And Stacey, I'm just going to call it right now. I'm picking the New England Patriots to win in this game. I think the Buffalo Bills are really searching. They're trying to figure out who they are, exactly who they are. And I think the New England Patriots are rolling. They know who they are. They know how to win. And so I think the New England Patriots win this game.
That would put the Patriots in 9-4 on the season. They already have a one-game lead in the AFC East. It would further cement their place in the AFC East. Would I still expect the Bills to make the playoffs? Absolutely. But it would also mean that after basically just one down year, I'm not counting the wild card loss as a down year, they still had Brady. The Patriots right back in it. Does that put an end to the whole Brady versus Belichick? Looks like Brady won that debate.
Here's the thing. No, it doesn't. No one wins. What it does is it says that, hey, Bill Belichick, He's a really good coach. He's the greatest of all time. Tom Brady, greatest quarterback of all time. Can we just leave it at that?
No,
I mean,
absolutely not. This is
sports not radio. One guy carried the other, in my opinion. I think Bill Belichick did an amazing job of continuing to keep evolving and allowing Tom Brady to be successful and revamping that roster to have a unprecedented run of success. I think Tom Brady was the glue that held everything together, and no matter what Bill Belichick wanted to do and the turnover on the roster and all that, Tom Brady was the constant, and he was the thing that kept it all together and came up big in clutch situations. Both things can be true. Both guys can be great. Can we just leave it at that?
No, Jake. Yes, absolutely. It is true. No time for nuance here. One final story here. How could I forget? The most important story coming out of the NFL this weekend was what, Jake? That's right. The Detroit Lions got their very first win of
Finally!
The season thanks to a walk-off home run from walk-off touchdown
it
from
was
Jared Goff. It was a home run.
They
with
got up and
four,
bit some kneecaps.
4 seconds remaining. Let me tell you what. G. Scott and I were on the Toyota fan deck out at Lumen Field, and there were TVs behind us where Seahawks fans, 20 minutes before the Seahawks game starts, backs are turned to the field, and everyone is watching the Detroit Lions game to see if they can actually get this done.
I'm so dang happy for Dan Campbell. Like, seriously.
No kneecaps were harmed.
You talk about somebody that has really endeared himself to NFL fans, to the Detroit Lions fan base and everything else. I mean, look, he is a unique guy. He is a he comes across as a major meathead. But the one thing that he has done, I think he has gained a lot of the respect of the guys in that locker room. And to be able to have that win, knowing that you're in the midst of a rebuild job and you're just trying to prove your worth in this league, it is so incredibly hard. And especially when you get on a downturn like they have been, getting that win, man, that's huge. That's a big deal for them, and really happy for Dan Campbell.
All right, there was a great day from Russell Wilson, a great day from both wide receivers who on the same day managed to be productive. A nice defensive stop to seal the deal. Lots to be excited about coming out of this Seahawks win. What are you most encouraged by in the Seahawks win yesterday? We're going to talk about that next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
We're going to turn it over to you guys in about 15 minutes. Going to open up phone lines. You're going to have the same question. I'll give you the number to call in a couple minutes. Before we get to that, this hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by the Pro Club. And I asked you, Jake, and I'll ask myself, what were you most encouraged to see from the Seahawks yesterday? Pretty easy place to start.
I mean, pretty easy place to start is Russell Wilson.
Yeah.
I mean, that is the easiest place to start right off the bat, and seeing him be able to get back to playing like himself, being able to use the short to intermediate pass game as well because he needed it. I mean, the offensive line was not going to hold up in that game for consistent deep shots down the field. They needed to get the ball out of his hands, and you saw even when it wasn't successful in that first series of the game, it was just like, oh my gosh, these receivers can't block on a perimeter screen or bubble to save their life all season long, which I do think is a bigger issue, by the way,
yeah,
for this offense, and it has been, but those were not successful. But you could see the effort and the idea that, hey, we got to get the ball out of Russ's hands today because he is not going to have a chance. And so I thought that part of it was good to see. The other part, Stacy, that I would say that I was encouraged to see is really seeing the defense at times really shut the San Francisco 49ers down. I mean, there were times where they were able to generate three and outs, and you know, they get to third and long or medium, and I don't know how you guys feel when they get into those situations. I'm just expecting a completion. I really am. Because of all the years and watching this team struggle in those types of areas and not get to the quarterback. But there were a lot of times where they were either able to get home to Jimmy G or for the most part have pretty solid coverage on the back end. And I thought that was really encouraging to watch.
How about this one? 33 minutes. 33 minutes.
What's the significance of that?
Time of possession for the Seattle Seahawks.
Get out of here.
I swear. Now, San Francisco had the ball for 26 minutes, Jake. You know what that means? It means that Seattle won time of possession, which is something they have not done this season. Not only have
finally
they not done that this season, they are last in the league in times of possession, excluding overtime. But even with overtime, it wouldn't change anything. They're averaging 24 minutes. So 24 minutes, they possessed the ball for nearly 10 more minutes than they do in any game on average.
That's insane. Stacey, I kid you not, during the broadcast, they had mentioned that the Seahawks were winning the time of possession battle, and Brooke was looking at her phone at that time, and I was like, Brooke, did you just hear that? She was like, "What? No, what?" And I was like, they are winning the time of possession.
Do you
understand? No, this was like in the third quarter, I think, is what they mentioned. Like, do you understand that they have not done it up to this point? And she was like, yeah, no, I get it. Like, it's a big deal, but like you're overreacting right now. Yeah. But I couldn't believe my ears. Like, yes, finally. And you see obviously how big of a difference that ends up making for your team.
The best part was Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times tweeting out in the first quarter when they had like literally no offense that they were winning time of possession. Like, Bob, stop.
You want to know something else that was encouraging to see? How about Rashad Penny making it through an entire game without getting injured?
Not only that, but was it 28 yards? Having a pretty nice scramble. Here's what I will say.
On a screen pass, Stacey. A successful screen.
I'm going to be real honest with you. I don't know what to take from Rashad Penny.
I mean, honestly.
Like, do I feel encouraged if I'm not confident it can continue?
No.
I don't know. I mean, I feel encouraged, for instance, that that Russell Wilson improved. Because mm-hmm. I'm more confident that he can continue to improve as he gets healthier.
Right.
How much do I take from Rashad Penny having a pretty solid day? And throwing a great block, by the way. Rashad Penny had a pretty solid game.
Oh, with the free safety coming off the edge? Yeah, absolutely. That was a fantastic block. Look, it was great to see. It also makes it incredibly frustrating because of the injury history that he's had and not being able to consistently get himself on the field. So, yeah, I mean, it was nice to see him actually contribute and to be able to be a successful part of the game. But like you said, I don't know if he can build off of that. I don't know if that's something that is going to continue. But the offense being successful and the running game, if they're going to have any sort of life, yeah, you're going to need Rashad Penny to contribute to that.
A couple other stats I'm going to throw out here. Seahawks defense, if the key of the game was to stop the run, they held San Francisco to 71 yards on the ground. You talked about that a bit in four down territory. I'm sure we'll get into it with callers. You also looked at a team that managed to overcome its turnovers. Seattle had 3 turnovers. That is not anything encouraging coming out of this game. However,
no. However,
they won in spite of that. I feel most encouraged, Jake. I think the thing that I immediately rewatched after it was over when I was able to was the goal line stand from the defense. That was the first thing I went back and watched, in part because I was on the field and couldn't see it from my position. I just had to look up on the big screen in the stadium itself, and you didn't get quite the same look at it. And so going back to watch it, I was very impressed by it. Impressed by Sidney Jones. Impressed by Ryan Neal, who was part of a nice tackle in there on, I think, second down.
Yeah.
Just impressed with Carlos Dunlap, who also had on a play that was halted because there was a timeout called, had some pretty nice speed off the edge, and that might have been because the offensive line realized it was a timeout, or maybe it was him and he just had a great rush. But, I mean, it was a great, great series from the defense.
Yeah, it was. And it was encouraging. You talk about Carlos Dunlap. It was encouraging to see him actually have some production and get some good rushes off the edge. To get that safety to, you know, see him bat the ball down. I mean, that's classic Carlos Dunlap, who he has been in his career. It makes you wonder why the heck he is not on the field more often, but it's been a scheme change for them. And it's also been the idea that, hey, we're going to use you as more of a third down pass rusher, a pass rushing specialist rather than a first, second down player. I think seeing that role for him be used successfully was positive to see. But Stacey, I know we're talking about encouraging things. I just can't get over this offensive line and how bad they are.
Okay, but
it's really hard. I mean, when you talk about encouraging things, if your offensive line play doesn't get better and you don't have the ability to run the football consistently and protect your quarterback, I mean, that is hard to that's hard to build off of, and you can't have that be the case for the remaining 5 games in order for you to be successful and win on a consistent basis.
Something tells me there's going to be a caller or two that calls in and says, I'm not encouraged about anything. I'm not encouraged about anything because I know they can't sustain it.
Certainly,
and there's probably
going to
be someone else that takes a glass half full approach because three of the last five opponents are the Texans, Lions, and Bears. So here's what I need you to do. I need you to call in. That is your question. What are you most encouraged about? So I want you to think of it as, look, here's what I would buy stock in right now. Like, here's what I'm confident. I mean, I'm leaving this game encouraged by what I saw from Adrian Peterson because I think he can do something like this again. Or maybe you're leaving this game feeling genuinely encouraged by Russell Wilson, genuinely encouraged by the defense. Or maybe you don't feel encouraged at all. I want if you genuinely don't, we want to hear that too. So here's the number to call, 206-421-3776. Again, that number is 206-421-3776. Phone lines are open now.